Kia ora. Welcome to Amrit's Podcast, episode 304. Today is Friday, May 30th, 2014. Well, I'm back again. Now, today I've got a bunch of updates, including about some things I was alluding to last time. But first, something from the news, very close to home, actually. This past Saturday, there was a murder in our neighborhood. And, well, death, anyway. A woman died in our neighborhood. And I've blogged about this. I'll put a link in the show notes. But the bare bones of the story is that a woman was working late in the Auckland CBD on Saturday evening. She caught the bus out of the CBD around 7 and got to the bus stop in our neighborhood, I don't know, 45 minutes later maybe, and was walking down the street, and something happened to her. Don't know what, but she disappeared. And a couple days later, her body was found in the wooded area next to a cemetery, of all places. And that's really all we know. A guy has been arrested, he's appeared before a judge, and he's being remanded in custody without bail, and that's all we know. Now, naturally, there's been a lot of speculation in social media and so on about what could have happened and why, and all those sorts of things. I don't think that's particularly productive, and it can also get into trouble because the judge has suppressed all information about the defendant, about his name and his photographs of him and any details about his background. So people who go around speculating about him or talk about things from his background are actually risking prosecution by doing so, even when it's like a Facebook comment or a tweet or what have you. So I ain't going there. I've heard rumors too, and I'm not repeating them because, well, first of all, I think it's silly because I don't know the veracity of any of the rumors that I've heard. So I think it's kind of pointless. But in the blog post, I talked about the aftermath, what happened with the police investigation in the neighborhood. The police came by here like 4 different times. And that's probably all I'm going to say about it here, mostly because there really is nothing that I can say. I don't know the details of what happened. Nobody does. Well, the police do, I presume. Nothing's been released publicly. And until it is, it's kind of, there's not much point in my talking about it. But I bring it up at all, first of all, because it happened in our neighborhood, but also because it's a really rare thing. Murder in New Zealand is so rare that when one happens, it makes the evening news nationwide. And although murder is always a bad, horrible, terrible thing, the fact that it's that rare is something I actually quite like about this country, that it's a really rare thing to happen. And there are also very seldom gun deaths, too, but that's a whole other issue. Now, last time I was alluding to several things, and mostly things I didn't feel comfortable talking about. And first among them was the fact that my friend Richard Hills was confirmed as the Labour Party candidate at the end of March. And like I said, I didn't really feel comfortable talking about that, partly because he wasn't confirmed and I didn't know what the protocols were and all that. And so I just thought, well, the best thing to do probably is just to say nothing at all and then just, you know, talk about it later. And that's what I'm doing. He was uncontested for the position, for the selection as it happens. And he just had to be, well, we call it being confirmed by the members of the LEC, as it's called, which stands for Labour Electorate Committee. And so he was confirmed, and he is now our candidate in this electorate. And he asked me to be his campaign manager. And now that sounds more highfalutin and important than it actually is, because he is an experienced candidate. He's been elected twice to local board. He knows how to campaign. He knows how to run a campaign. He basically is taking care of his own stuff. And my role is to support him. The things that he doesn't want to do or doesn't have time to do, I can take care of those things for him so he doesn't have to be bothered with them. And we have volunteers doing very specific roles, like coordinating where the signs are going to go up when they're allowed in a couple months, and coordinating the distribution, the people who distribute literature to specific addresses and stuff, you know, from the party and so on. So there's not, we don't need a coordinator in the same sense that, say, an American campaign would, or even some other electorates here in New Zealand. So my role is going to be fairly low-key, and that actually suits me just fine. But in the process of this, we had the annual general meeting, AGM it's called, of the local Labour Electorate Committee. I don't remember when it was, early April, I guess it was, or later in April, I'm not sure. Anyway, recently. And there was a shortage of people to take positions. And so I got selected as the, I don't even remember the name of the title, something like, not membership coordinator, but something like that. And it's basically, they have 6 positions on the governing body or whatever of the LEC. And the reason they do that is so they can have three men and three women. And so this particular position is only there for gender balance, really. It doesn't, I mean, most of them don't actually do anything. The people who do the things are the chair, the secretary, and the treasurer. Those are the main ones. And I said I was perfectly willing to stand aside if they needed the position for gender balance and stuff, because I don't actually need the position. But after I asked for a copy of the Constitution, which actually comes from the National Party, and it turns out the party, the Labor Electric Committee, is supposed to be promoting political conversations and social aspects and stuff like that, which, as far as I'm aware, it hasn't done, at least not since I've been aware of it. And so that suggests things for the future that could be interesting. But be that as it may, the campaign overall nationwide is just early days. And Labor is pretty much done with its selection process now. It hasn't done its list yet. The Green Party has done their list. I don't think the National Party's done their list. So it's a bit all over the place. The Internet Party, which is being backed by Kim.com, who you may or may not have heard of, but he was the founder of Mega Upload, and he's fighting extradition to the U.S. to fight some sort of piracy charges or blah-de-blah-de-blah. His party has announced a merger with the Mana Party, which is a one-party MP. The MP is Hone Harawira, and his seat is Te Taitokoro, which is northernmost part of New Zealand, Northland. It's from Auckland north. It's north of from the north shore of Auckland, primarily the harbor, basically, up to the very tippy tip of the North Island. And so if he wins his seat, they will probably get two, maybe three MPs in Parliament. And so that's what the merger is all about. And Kim.com has apparently pledged $3 million to bankroll it, which is a lot from a minor party, especially one that at the moment only has one MP. Excuse me, I'm going to have to drink my coffee. That's better. I was getting a frog in my throat. Read it. Anyway, sorry. The campaigning in earnest hasn't started. The House doesn't rise until August, I think it is, because the official campaign is 5 weeks long, and signs don't go up until, I think it's 8 or 9 weeks before the election. So what's that? July sometime, I guess. And so it doesn't really feel like we're in campaign mode yet, which in some ways is good, because you can sort of concentrate on getting policy out and all that sort of thing. But I received an email after, I think it was after the last episode, forgive me if I've got my time frame mixed up, from Bank, our American correspondent, or I should say correspondent in America, saying that I might want to elaborate a little bit on why people join political parties at all in New Zealand, because it is kind of rare in America. In the U.S., I was never a member of any particular party, but I voted for particular parties. And it's pretty rare for people to be financial members of an American political party. They might be volunteers, they might take part, and so on, but they don't necessarily, they're not actually paid members in as such, like for any other organization. Well, in New Zealand, they are, or can be. A party to be registered has to have a minimum number of members. I think it's 500. I could be wrong about that. I didn't look it up. That's nationwide. And in order to be members, they have to pay some nominal fee. It can only be like $5, but the point is they have to pay something and fill out a form to become a member of that party, and then the party can register as a party, and then it qualifies for government funding and to have their candidate on the ballot and blah de blah de blah. Now all the goods that come with being a party. And so every party wants to have members, and the two biggest parties are the Labour Party and the National Party. The Greens are third, and I have no idea what the membership of the others are, but they're much, much smaller. And so the thing about the party members is that they are financially supporting the party of their choice so that the party can take care of basic things, keeping a headquarters running, doing all the behind-the-scenes things that parties need to do on an ongoing basis, not just in an election year, and also to help when the election year does roll around. And the New Zealand system, like most Westminster-style parliamentary systems, is completely different from the U.S., because in the U.S., politicians run as individuals. they support a party and they'll caucus with a party, even if they're not members of it. Like Bernie Sanders is an independent, but he caucuses with the Democrats. And they, in America, you represent your congressional district or your state or whatever, and the party secondarily. Although in the case of the 2010 Republican people elected for the first term to the U.S. House, they tended to place party loyalty ahead of everything. In that sense, it's more like our system because you're not really elected as an individual. You're elected as part of a party. And you, if you're elected to an electorate and you have a falling out with your party, you can stay there. But in the next election, you have to stand again. I don't think you automatically, I don't believe that there is a, no, there isn't automatically a by-election if somebody leaves the party, if they're an elected MP. If there's a falling out in their list MP, they're actually not kicked out then either, although I think they should be because they were elected as part of the party, and if they're not going to represent that party, they shouldn't be in parliament, in my opinion. But party is what matters for our system. Now you may remember under MMP, our election system, we have two votes. One is for the party we want to represent us in parliament, or the party we want to form government, and the second is for the person we want to represent us personally in parliament. And that's called the electorate vote. And the vote, the total seats in parliament are distributed based on the result of the party list election. So if, say, Labour gets 60% of the party vote, it gets 60% of the seats. And it doesn't matter how many electorates they win. They don't win enough electorates, then they take them from the party list. They win too many electorates, and which is, I don't think, likely for any party. But if they win too many electorates, then parliament has what they call an overhang. And it expands in size to accommodate, to keep the proportionality. Because the whole point of MMP is to keep it proportional to the party vote. So that the however many seats there are in parliament, it's always the correct percentage. That's what it's all about. So under our system, party matters more than person. And that's why so many people will join a party, because the member of parliament, whether the list or electorate, doesn't matter. Once they get to Wellington, they have to vote according to the party line, except in the rare circumstances where they're given what we call a conscience vote, which means they can vote however they want. I think other countries call it a free vote. It's got other names. But basically, they can vote however they want. But otherwise, they are required to vote however their caucus tells them to vote. They decide as a caucus. And it is really pretty rare that they can just vote however they want. And so party matters quite a lot in New Zealand, far more than it does in the U.S. or a similar type of system. It's fairly true, I think, of most Westminster-style parliamentary systems. I'm not sure. But anyway, that is pretty much why party matters so much. It's about providing finance to the party to advance its goals and its agenda. And it's about, that's actually the main reason why people become parties, is to financially support the party of their choice that most closely aligns with their values and beliefs. So, and I've been a member of the Labour Party, off and on, to be honest, for about a dozen years, probably a bit longer. And at the moment, I'm a member of what they call Victory for Labour, which basically just means I give them a set amount every month, and they can count on it, they can budget it. I mean, sure, you can cancel it, but the point is that most people don't. And it gives them a certain amount of money that they can count on for budgeting purposes, and that's a really good thing by itself. Now, I want to move on to an entirely different subject, and that's my teeth, because I was sort of in the midst of things when I last podcasted. Since then, I've been to the periodontist, and four treatments over 2 weeks, two treatments in each week, Tuesday and Friday, and it was not good. The periodontist said I advanced gum disease, and when he did the first examination, he said that I had two molars on one side, on the bottom, a molar on the top, one of my bottom front teeth, and I think it was it. I think it was four or five teeth that I was eventually going to lose because their support was gone. Well, after he had a chance to thoroughly analyze the 3D X-rays, he felt that fairly confident that with proper treatment, like seeing him every 3 months or 6 months or whatever, that I should be able to keep them for many years to come. All of which, I mean, that's good news, and that's wonderful. And he went in there and he said, I advanced infection and so on. And he cleaned it all up and got it all sorted and so on. Go back to see the hygienist next month, and then I think it is, and then him about 6 weeks after that. And we'll play it by ear, see how it goes. But this does throw into doubt what I can do about my pretty smile that I wanted. Doesn't mean necessarily that I won't be able to have it, but it does complicate things quite a bit because some of the teeth may not support being moved around, and that could complicate things. So I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what the prognosis is for that, let alone the health of my gums and teeth overall. But I do know that it was something that needed to be done. When I went to see the periodontist, one of the first things he said to me when he was done with the examination, he said, when was the last time you saw your GP? I said, oh, I don't know. It's been years because I don't get sick. He said, I'd make an appointment as soon as you can. And of course, that kind of scared me, as you might imagine. And the reason for that is that periodontal disease, gum disease, can cause heart attacks and strokes, or can lead to heart attacks and strokes, or heart disease and strokes. And so naturally, I went as soon as I could to get my get an appointment, and I got one. And my blood pressure was high, and they ordered the standard blood test for cholesterol and blood sugar and whatever else it is they test for. Also the poop test, we got to do little smears on a card, and they check for bowel cancer, or actually they're looking for blood. And if they find that, then they have you do a colonoscopy, because that's not routinely done in New Zealand. In fact, it's only done if there's some sort of indicative test or symptoms before that. And so that's why the card is optional. And she said, you could go either way on this, because it gives a lot of false positives that then have to be investigated. You might go through that for nothing. So, but on the other hand, it could catch something early. And so I thought, well, why not? Free, so why not? And the blood tests are also free. And I last had some a few years ago. Now, one of the things she wanted me to do after that was to use, we've got a blood pressure monitor at home, and she wanted me to spend a week testing my blood pressure every day, basically do a diary. And I did that, and my blood pressure was considerably lower than it was at the doctor's office. Now, this is after about a couple weeks later before I did it, I think, after I was done with my periodontal treatment and I was settling down a bit. And so that was good. It's a bit high, but it's not like, oh my God, I've got to get on medication high. It's just kind of, well, as I lose weight, it's more likely to return to normal. And so that was good. That was all good news. I haven't done the blood tests and poop test yet because I haven't gotten around to it partly. But because of all the stress about all these dental dramas, all the dental appointments and the periodontal treatment and then getting scared about seeing the doctor and all that, I got a pretty bad gout attack that lasted for about 3 weeks. And so that only made things worse for me because here I'm not able to exercise, and I'm really getting concerned about this, and kind of thing. Well, that eventually went away, and as it always does, and things have been going much better since then. And I finished the periodontal treatments. It was 2 weeks ago today, and I've been had to use this god awful mouth rinse after every brush twice a day. It's called Savacol. I think that's how I pronounce it. It's from Colgate, so it might be available in the U.S., but it tastes foul because it is especially strong at killing bacteria, because after all this work was done, they wanted to kill any bacteria that was flying around my mouth. And so I've had to use it twice a day, and then now after today, I'm supposed to be able to switch to normal mouthwash. He said Listerine, actually. So, yeah, it's been a funny old time, it has, and very trying, and this has taken a lot of time and energy and a hell of a lot of money. And then last week, I guess it was, I took the dogs in for their annual checkup and jabs and stuff, and they both have the dog equivalent of what I had, and they both have to go in and have their teeth cleaned, and Sunny has a tooth that's loose, which she will probably lose, one of her premolars. But the thing is that when they do it on dogs, they give them a general anesthetic. And we've both been really leery about doing that with our experience with Sive and Curzon. It was just really kind of a raw thing. But especially because I've been through it, we realize the importance of it. And so we are going to do it as soon as we can. But after my huge expense, I sort of drained our ready cash. So we might have to wait a little bit and save up some money to take care of the fur babies. But they are on the agenda. And these things happen, and you just have to deal with them as they come along. So those are some updates and some of the things I was talking about last time and alluding to last time. And in the weeks and months ahead, I won't be talking a whole lot about party strategy and how the campaign is specifically going. But there will be some things that I can talk about, and where I can, I will. Otherwise, I'll just wait until after it's all over and tell you the gory details. But I have a further announcement, one that I think a lot of people already know, but in case you don't, I once again have a voice comment line, which is 206-426-5394. And I set that up beginning of April, I guess it was. And I put out the call for people to bring it. Actually, I put out the call through Twitter and I think the Google Plus page or something. And asking people to call within 72 hours to activate it, because if not, then I would already lose the number even before I even used it. And I received this call.
Was there supposed to be an outgoing message for this call service? And did you get a call within 72 hours?
That was David B., whose voice I recognize from listening to the occasional fag. And there was not, at that time, an outgoing message. I just set up the line, and I didn't bother to record one, because in order to record an outgoing message, I had to ring the number myself. And I actually sort of wanted to see if anybody would ring it. And David B. did. And then I received this call.
Just testing to make sure that you actually did your outgoing message. Thank you. Bye.
That, as longtime listeners will remember, is Roger Green. And at that time, no, I had not done the outgoing message. And so then I received this call.
Hi, Arthur. This is Arthur. Just wanted to let you know you've got a outgoing voice message now. Bye.
Well, I figured as long as I was calling the voice line anyway, I might as well leave a message. So I I did. But it shows you that I don't always plan these things out very well, because I stumbled on my own words. But since then, I've received an actual call, and that's this.
You got a new phone, but we haven't gotten a new blog, what the heck do you call your thing, a podcast. Yes, I know. It's been so long that I can't remember. But the blogging you're doing really well. And a podcast, it's early on Sunday morning in the U.S., so what do I know? Yeah, you can use this if you want to, and I'll stumble all over it and be embarrassed, whatever. Bye.
Now, with an invitation like that, who could possibly resist? Plus, it makes me feel not so bad about stumbling over the words in my own message. But anyway, be that as it may. What Roger is referring to, of course, is that I set up the phone line and then didn't podcast after that. Although, actually, that's technically, it's technically not true, but it is true no matter how you slice it. However, I had recorded two podcasts before that, and they just never saw the light of day. And but it's not unusual for me to record the same episode several times, and this was one of them. Now, I have blogged extensively. This month is New Zealand Music Month, and I decided for some strange reason to do a post a day about New Zealand music artists. And I'll put a link to all those blog posts in the show notes for this episode as well. If you want to learn a bit about some New Zealand artists and New Zealand music, it's a way of doing it. Once I conclude the series, I may have something more to say about the experience. I certainly will on the blog anyway. But that's what I've been up to. And also since Roger's call, I've been blogging more as well, not just because of New Zealand Music Month, but in general. I'm finally starting to have time and energy to do all that sort of stuff. So that's all good. Before I go, happy birthday to Nessa, and also to Paul, my former host of, what was it called? Arthur and Paul Talk. See how quickly they forget? But yes, happy birthday to both of them, and to others I'm sure I'm missing and forgetting. I just happen to remember those two in particular, partly because Nessa asked for a podcast for her birthday, so this is the best I can do. But that's it for today. That's it for this week. That's apparently it for this month. I will talk to you when I talk to you. Bye. You can comment on this or any episode of the Emrens Podcast at emrenspodcast.com, where you can also leave a voice message. You can ring my voicemail line, 206-426-5394. And you can email me, with or without a voice message, at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at emrenspodcast.com. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.